Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This is the stinking truth,
man. It was a roller coaster, wasn't it? And let's face it. Was there any better reality TV on this weekend than watching the Shador Sanders story?
No, it was incredible. Yeah, I mean, it. I don't even think it's arguable. It's the greatest slide in NFL draft history, right?
Yep.
A guy that was universally considered a first round pick. And if you aggregate all the mock drafts and put them all together, he was somewhere around 11 to 13. Yep. I think 93% of all mock drafts had him going in the first round. And let's face it, man, and these are not just some also-rans or guys like you and me that aren't really following the NFL draft. We just know it well enough to talk a little bit about it, right, and to talk about the first rounders. These are guys who do this for a living. The Mel Kuypers of the world, the Todd McShays of the world, on and on, Joel Klatt, you know, this, that, and the other. Guys that have, you know, are very reputable, who really dig into this stuff, who really know the draft, who have years and years and years of coverage and have nailed it time and time again, all had Shador Sanders being rated. Mel Kiper had him as the first overall quarterback and then eventually moved him down to number two. But everybody had him right there. And for him to go from a potential first rounder to the fifth round overall, number 144 taken and the sixth quarterback taken in the draft, absolutely epic slide.
So the question's why?
Well, I think there's a couple of things, Mike. I mean, if we're just looking on the surface, because I've heard a lot of people talk about collusion, and we know that this is not just a quarterback driven league, but it's a quarterback deprived league. Now, the thing is, when I hear people say, well, 32 teams passed on him, you know, four different times before he got drafted in the first round, not all 32 teams are looking for a quarterback. So I think that's one thing that you have to keep in mind. Then two, if you have generational talent, right, teams will overlook some of the intangible things or some of the character things that they don't care for. This goes all the way back to the start of football season last year at CU, when the reports coming out of CU were, we're going to dictate where he goes in the draft. Hey, there's six or seven teams that he'll get drafted for. If you take him and you're not one of our teams, hey, c'est la vie, we're not signing with you. You know, this bravado, this stuff that was coming out of CU, from Dion, from Shador, like none of that ever sits well with NFL types, okay? But if you have generational talent, then it doesn't matter that you say that stuff because you're still going to get taken, right? Hey, John Elway, don't draft me, Baltimore. I don't want to go there. Hey, you know, like Eli Manning, don't draft me, San Diego. I'm not going to play there. San Diego drafts Eli. Baltimore drafts John. Draft day trades were consummated. John becomes a Denver Bronco. Eli becomes a New York Giant. So we know that if you have generational type talent, doesn't matter that you said that stuff before the draft. But Shador doesn't. Frankly, Shador is incredibly accurate, throws a nice ball, does not have elite-level athleticism, does not have elite-level arm talent, okay? But you could still be a first-rounder because of your ability to anticipate, your ability to throw guys open, your accuracy that you possess. But you couple that with what has reported to be bad meetings with different teams. Like, that's the part that we don't have until we get into the draft process, right? Like all the stuff that we have before the draft going in and leading into the combine is all the film stuff we see, all the things, the big plays, you know, the throws and all that stuff. But after this combine process, a lot of stuff is the individual meetings, and you better shine in those like meetings, you better shine in that aspect of the draft process, especially if you play quarterback. And we heard terms like arrogant. We heard terms like elitist. We heard terms like, poor meeting,
unprepared. Overall.
Yeah, unprepared, just all those things that we heard. And I'm sure those things had more to do with him dropping in this draft than anything else that we could, that we could throw out there.
I thought the slide was explained in a I think it was pretty simple, honestly. I think once the quarterback needy teams in the NFL decided that he was not worth a first round pick, then he was screwed. And he was going to drop, because here's why. Once you get past the first round, if you're a quarterback taken after that, then you walk into that and you're put in that developmental backup type of category. Well, the one thing NFL teams don't want is their developmental quarterback or their backup quarterback to be a distraction. They don't want the big tent to be set up. They don't want the circus atmosphere. I kind of compare what I saw this weekend with Shedeur Sanders to Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow easily could have been a backup quarterback or a third string quarterback on somebody's team for a long, long time, right? But teams just looked at it and said, for that role, it's not worth the attention. It's not worth the drama. It's not worth all the aggravation that could come with it. So I think teams, the reason you saw a lot of these other quarterbacks go ahead of Shedeur, it's not because they're a better prospect than Shedeur. It was just that they're going to create less drama than a guy like Shedeur would bring. So that's why I think ultimately he lasted all the way to the fifth round. And honestly, Stink, the only reason I think he even got drafted was because Cleveland's owner came in and said, hey, I see the potential here for some headlines, some attention, some buzz. And I think he ordered the Browns to move up and draft him.
Yeah, if you look at the video of Stefanski and Barry, the head coach and GM, like, it was one of those things where, like, they had to come up. It felt like they had to come up with a reason. Like, they weren't really looking to draft him, and then they had to come up with a reason. Like, the owner comes in and goes, "This is who we're drafting." They're like, "Oh shoot, let's get our story together, right?" And they're like, "Hey, upon further review, the talent was just such that we could not." We could not look at ourselves, look at ourselves in the mirror the next day if we bypass that level of talent, because it just sounded like a lot of, lawyer talk, like heretofore, consequently, as it were,
I felt like watching that video. I was almost like, please blink twice if you're being held against your will.
Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So there was part of that. There was part of that aspect to them taking Shedeur. But with that said, Mike, let's face it. Like, you're going to Cleveland, the competition level, we know Deshaun Watson is done, right? He's not going to play. You got another torn, Achilles. And then you got 40-year-old Joe Flacco, which I have a lot of respect for Joe, but he's 40. You got tiny little hands, Kenny Pickett.
Pray for him.
Pray for his tiny little hands. You got tiny little guy in Daniel Gabriel. Like, that'd be
Dylan Gabriel, but who cares?
Same thing, whatever. Yeah, whatever his name is, Gabriel. What is his name?
Dylan.
What did I call him?
Daniel. Yeah. You have a son named Daniel.
Right. Plus Daniel. It's
until biblical. They prove they could play in the NFL, you don't care about their names anyway.
You're 100% right. So they took him in the third round. He was, 100 picks better than Shedeur, right? Or whatever it was. I don't know. And so then my watch is talking to me. Ultimately, I look at all that stuff. And yet you look at where he's at right now and you think, hey, listen, if he's all the things he was in college, then maybe, just maybe, he could be a guy that takes over. It's really interesting to me. And I had said this, and I've said it on our radio show a bunch, so you can back me up on this. This is not just hindsight being 2020. When I was up at CU doing some coaching in the spring, I really felt like their lack of attention to running the ball and some of their protection schemes, I thought, were horrendous. And I thought a lot of that was due to the fact that we want Shedeur to be the star. And, you know, my thought process, and I had had this conversation with Dion as well, is, you know, I would rather Shador go 21 of 26 for 237 yards and two TDs and you win than be in a shootout where he's going, you know, 30 of 42 for 426 yards and four TDs, but you end up losing the game. And, you know, my thought process is protection, run the ball, take pressure off your quarterback, and ultimately it's going to be better for him in the long run. And this goes back to just the pre-draft process. Did you get caught up in numbers in hoping that you would elevate Shador right to a point where, like, he gets drafted super high? And did it actually, your philosophy actually cost him opportunity in this draft? Like, we'll never know the answer to that, but I was a critic of the way they operated their offense. And you know this from day one, because I thought they didn't put enough attention to some of the things that help a quarterback and take him off the high dive. And, you know, Shador, frankly, you know, people talk about him, well, not, you know, taking sacks and, you know, his lack of you're spinning out of the pocket and taking unnecessary sacks and all this stuff. And I would tell you, being up there a little bit, I thought some of the protection stuff was shoddy at best.